you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
LAist Studios.
Today on the LA Report, anti-Semitism is on the rise in California. While mammograms are now recommended at 40, black women are dying from breast cancer at much higher rates than white women.
There are disparities along the whole diagnosis and treatment pathway.
And the embattled president of Whittier College steps down. Also coming up later on the show, how a playwright's past work in gang intervention influences her new play set in Santa Monica. Garment workers weigh in on new housing that might be coming to manufacturing zones in LA. Plus, we hear from local Armenian Americans anxious over the ongoing conflict between Armenia and Azerbaijan. It's Sunday, May 14th. I'm Julia Paskin, and this is the weekend edition of the LA Report from LAist 89.3. Anti-Semitic hate crimes are on the rise in California, according to a new report by the Anti-Defamation League. More than 500 acts were recorded last year. That's a 40% increase from the year before. The report found supremacist propaganda jumped by 90%. Rabbi Sharon Brouse is the founder of ECAR, an LA-based Jewish congregation.
Anti-Semitism is a wedge that has been used traditionally and historically to shatter progressive, anti-racism, pro-democracy, social justice camps.
Brouse adds, in the 6 years since the deadly white supremacist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, she's seen a rise in fear within Jewish communities. In other news, imagine a football field filled with a foot of standing water. Now multiply that by 55,000. That's how much water could be captured by the state's emergency flood diversion program. The idea is twofold: divert flood water from Central Valley communities and use it to refill groundwater basins. Those basins are depleted from 3 years of severe drought. That leaves plenty of storage space to hold water from this year's storms. Stephen Springhorn is a geologist with the Department of Water Resources. He says the program aims to prepare for weather whiplashes.
So we can maximize the use of water when we have it and prepare for the years when we don't have as much water.
For the first time, a wolf has been recorded using a man-made path made for wildlife in California. Wildlife crossings give animals a chance to avoid busy freeways. California passed the Safe Roads and Wildlife Protection Act last year, which requires Caltrans to prioritize crossings when designing new roads. Mari Galloway is the California Program Director with the Wildlands Network that co-sponsored the bill.
Crossings strategically placed give them an opportunity to safely cross the road to the other side, which not only allows them to access the resources they need to survive, but it makes the road safer for drivers as well.
That wolf sighting was in Northern California. Here in Los Angeles, the Liberty Canyon Wildlife Crossing is under construction, and it will connect the Santa Monica Mountains to Simi Valley, avoiding the 101. More than 40,000 wildlife vehicle collisions were reported on state roads between 2016 and 2020. That's according to the UC Davis Road Ecology Center. The embattled president of Whittier College, Linda Oubre, announced that she's resigning at the end of June. LAist higher education reporter Adolfo Guzman Lopez said the sudden announcement might not be a surprising one.
The college's enrollment and funding have been dropping drastically. Linda Oubre seemed to have the right experience for the job. She was an executive at Disney, Times Mirror, and led San Francisco State's business school as its dean. But early on, she said publicly it was tough to change Whittier College. A Whittier College alumni group challenged her leadership, accusing her of taking the college in the wrong direction.
That's LAist Adolfo Guzman Lopez. Whittier's enrollment has shifted a lot over recent years, seeing a large increase in its Latino population, while also losing almost one-third of its undergraduate population since 2018. In other news, it is Mother's Day, and it can be a wonderful celebration, but it can also be a complicated and tough day if you've lost a child. Psychologist Jessica Zucker is author of I Had a Miscarriage, a memoir, a movement, and says that reluctance to talk about miscarriage makes it even harder.
And so if we just were able to articulate our pain, our losses, our experiences more comfortably out loud, my sense is that the shame could dissipate, and of course the stigma as well.
And it is a common experience for folks. One in four pregnancies experience a miscarriage. And remember, if today is a tough day and you need to talk, you can call the 988 Crisis Hotline 24/7. New recommendations say to start getting mammograms at age 40. That is 10 years sooner than before. The suggested change comes from the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force. Why now? Well, breast cancer among women in their 40s is increasing by about 2% each year, and Black women are 40% more likely to die from breast cancer than white women. Here's Carol Mangione, professor of medicine at UCLA and former chair of the task force.
There are disparities along the whole diagnosis and treatment pathway that will need to be addressed if we really want to see that 40% difference in mortality go away.
Another area of concern is inaccurate screenings. Nearly half of women have dense breasts, which lowers the accuracy of mammograms. More than 43,000 women in the U.S. die each year from breast cancer. That's according to the American Cancer Society. We'll be right back after this short break.
Imagine if you could charge your electric vehicle at the places you already love to eat, shop, and play. Whether you're at the movies, on your weekly grocery trip, or running errands at your local mall, Volta EV charging stations are built around your day-to-day and located in your community and nationwide. All you have to do is check in, plug in, and go about your day. It's EV charging made convenient. Download the Volta app to find your new favorite place to charge.
Welcome back to the LA Report. I'm Julia Paskin. Families that have grown apart can get pulled back together when a loved one dies. That's the catalyst for a reunion between two estranged family members and the play Favorite Cousins, now performing at Casa 0101 in Boyle Heights. Set in Santa Monica, the play explores gang violence and gentrification, and it's all created by playwright Lindsay Haley, who joins us now. Lindsay, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Tell us about the two main characters, Francis and Gloria, about the tensions working between them and also the bonds that are tying them together.
Francis and Gloria grew up together in their grandmother's home in Santa Monica. Gloria has gone on to college and has become a successful businesswoman and lives in Irvine. She now has a son who is about 20 years old. And Francis also has a son the same age, Stevie. They're at a family reunion at a park, in Virginia Avenue Park, in fact. And there is a gang shooting. Stevie is shot. He's died. And Armando, Francis's son, who's had all the privileges in life, he's given a life sentence in prison. Because as the shooter was running away, he's dropped his gun. Armando has picked up the gun and killed the shooter. But I wanted to explore what happens to the mothers in this case, divided by social class. There's a line in the play that where Gloria reminds Francis, at the end of the day, you know, you could live in Irvine, but at the end of the day, your son was still a Mexican.
Yeah. You also have a history of activism and have done your own work in gang intervention in Venice. Is that right?
In, think about 94, there was a West Side gang truce. And so at the first anniversary of the gang truce, we had a picnic at Mar Vista Park. We celebrated with carne asada, games. It just seemed like a big family reunion. The organizers asked the young men to please go up on the bleachers so that we could pray for our meal. And all the young men held hands, and each of them was wearing a white t-shirt. And I glimpsed up and I saw hundreds of young men, and they had their heads bowed. And it was apparent that the power that we hold in our numbers, and it was sad to know or wonder how many of these young men were going to stay alive or be able to excel past their police records. And it's an image that I hold on to and that has propelled the play.
Lindsay, what are you working on next?
This is actually the first of five plays, I'm calling it, for now, the West Side series. Each play is focused on the Mexican-American Chicano-Chicana community on the West Side. Often I go to the East Side. When I let them know that I'm from Venice, they always ask, there are Chicanas out there? Yes, generations. Mm. So I want to pay tribute to my community out here on the West Side. So that's what's next.
That is playwright Lindsay Haley on her new play. It's called Favorite Cousins, runs at Casa 0101 through May 21st. You can find more information and tickets at casa0101.org. Lindsay, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Gracias.
The Los Angeles City Council recently passed a new community plan for downtown LA. It aims to create thousands of new homes by allowing people to live in manufacturing zones like the Fashion District. David Wagner, who covers housing for LAist, asked garment workers how they feel about these new plans.
A few floors above the streets of downtown LA, sewing machines are humming as workers stitch together dresses for a small LA brand called Ocean and Main. Founder Mary Price points out the French seams carefully sewn into a silk caftan.
You don't see any raw edge. It's really clean. It's a highly skilled move, especially on a fabric that's as delicate and expensive as silk.
If you buy clothing made in the U.S., there's a good chance it comes from a factory just like this. L.A. is responsible for 83% of all sales of clothing cut and sewn in America. Price says her mission is to get more garment workers making sustainable clothes for a living wage.
Trying to make apparel in a way that moves the industry forward and is more forward thinking about how we treat people on the planet.
This is a world many Angelenos never get to see. But Price can look out the window and spot garment manufacturing in all directions.
That's an apparel building. If you looked out the studio on the other side, there's three more apparel buildings. So, and it's floor to ceiling of people doing exactly what we're doing.
Downtown's new community plan aims to put 20% of LA's new homes on just 1% of the city's land, in part by allowing housing in places like the Fashion District.
People look at that and go, oh, that'd be a cool loft space. Well, you're displacing a whole industry by looking at it as an expensive high-end loft.
But Roberto Vasquez says the Fashion District can include clothing and housing. He's an architect with Omgivning, a firm that transforms old, underused buildings into housing.
We just haven't created enough housing. The city of Los Angeles is in a housing crisis.
Vasquez envisions a fashion district where people live in the top floors of buildings, while garment workers continue to make clothes in ground floor factories.
There's plenty of opportunity to satisfy everyone's needs.
But some downtown property owners say city council members put too many restrictions on the fashion district.
We want housing. Everybody wants housing. Everybody wants to build, but it's got to make sense.
Mark Chadoff owns the California Flower Mall, a fashion district property his family ran as a textile factory for decades.
I had to switch from textile to floral because there was no textile business. That business has been dying, unfortunately, for a long time.
Now, Chadoff wants to build hundreds of units of housing above the flower market. But garment workers successfully pushed the city to require manufacturing space in future fashion district housing developments. Chadoff says those rules could stall plans for new housing.
I've watched the plan evolve and then completely be decimated for, I believe, possibly political reasons.
From his Westlake apartment building overlooking the downtown skyline, Francisco Mancia says he's glad workers won those concessions.
No solamente para mí, sino para una nueva generación.
The 20-year garment industry veteran wants to see the fashion district survive for a new generation of workers. LA's apparel industry already faces stiff competition from cheap, fast fashion made overseas. Mancia says lately he's been losing hours.
Me siento triste porque ha sido parte de la fuente de...
Mancia says it's sad to see the heart of LA's garment industry slowly disappearing. He knows the city needs more housing. On his income, it's tough to cover the rent, the bills, and other necessities. But he doubts his family will be able to afford any of the new housing coming to downtown. I'm David Wagner.
Many members of LA's Armenian community are on edge as tensions have flared again between Armenia and Azerbaijan over the disputed region of Nagorno-Karabakh, known as Artsakh to Armenians. It's part of Azerbaijan, but is 95% Armenian. Leslie Bearstein-Rojas, who covers immigrant communities for LAist, spoke with local Armenian Americans who are trying to do whatever they can to help.
From her home in La Cañada, Maggie Aratunian checks in regularly on her cousin in Stepanakert, a city in the center of the embattled Nagorno-Karabakh region.
I spoke to her this morning, as a matter of fact. The internet was so bad because of electricity issues that we had to keep calling each other back and forth about 15 times.
When they could connect, the news was pretty bad.
Her children don't have any diapers. She said that they eat fruit maybe once a month. She waited in line for a few hours last week just to get four pieces of apples. They don't have any gas.
Since December, the region known to Armenians as Artsakh has struggled with a blockade by Azerbaijan of the only road that connects it with neighboring Armenia. Azerbaijan says it's for security reasons, claiming Armenia was using the road to send weapons into the region, a charge Armenia denies. But Aratunian says that road is a critical lifeline for the 120,000 people in Nagorno-Karabakh.
They are heavily dependent on getting their supplies from Armenia. If they don't get it from Armenia, they don't get it at all.
Her family says basic utilities have also been disrupted.
A few weeks ago, when it was cold, they didn't have gas, so they were living under a lot of woolen blankets, and as were the children.
Nagorno-Karabakh has been disputed territory for decades. While it officially belongs to Azerbaijan, it has its own unofficial government with close ties to Armenia. Azerbaijan and Armenia have fought two wars over the region, the latest in 2020. In that war, Armenians in LA sent humanitarian aid, even went to fight on the front lines. Now, the blockade means they can't even send a care package. Aratunian says only Russian peacekeepers and the Red Cross can bring goods into the region.
But that is extremely rationed. So imagine having to wait in line for produce for hours on end.
Many local Armenians have been channeling their frustration into action, writing to Congress and seeking sanctions, like the suspension of military aid to Azerbaijan, which sells oil to the U.S. Aratunian, an attorney, volunteers with a nonprofit that gathers evidence of human rights abuses in Nagorno-Karabakh. The blockade has held up that work, but she's working on a report on anti-Armenian hate speech in Azerbaijan.
I had to put into action all the rage that I'm feeling, and if there's nothing I can do physically there, there's at least something I can do that can help my people in the long run.
About 20 miles away on the campus of USC, sophomore Mane Barikian is trying to do the same. Barikian has close relatives on the Armenian side of the border with Azerbaijan. She visited them just last summer. She says in September, as the conflict escalated, their town was shelled.
I got a text from my mom telling me that my aunt called, because it was in the middle of the night. Everyone was asleep, so they woke up to the sounds of shelling, and it was just very terrifying.
Barikian is active in USC's Armenian Students Association. Along with Armenian students at other schools, they've written an open letter to the academic community calling attention to the crisis, organized panels, and held a candlelight vigil.
I know it's very, very small on the scale of things that can help affect change, but because Los Angeles is home to such a huge Armenian diaspora, I think we have a special responsibility.
The hope, she says, is to get elected leaders to pay attention to a faraway conflict that may seem trivial to many, but which for her community brings back the trauma of the Armenian genocide a century ago. The other day on the phone with her cousin in Stepanakert, Maggie Aratunian decided to ask a difficult question.
I said, if they do open the blockade, will you leave? And she said yes, because this is no way to live.
Aratunian had hoped for a different answer, but she understood. By now, most of her relatives who once lived in Nagorno-Karabakh have left. I'm Leslie Bearstein-Rojas.
Thanks for listening to the weekend edition of the LA Report. The Weekend LA Report is hosted by me, Julia Paskin, and produced by Michael Cosentino with assistance from producer Daniel Martinez. Our engineer is Sean Corey Campbell. Our podcast is edited by Megan Garvey. Catherine Mailhouse is the director of content development, and our vice president of podcasts is Shayna Naomi Crockmall. Join us back here tomorrow. You can read more at LAist.com and listen live on the LAist app or on the radio at 89.3 FM. Listeners like you help make the LA Report possible. Please donate at laist.com/join. This podcast is supported by Gordon and Donna Crawford, who believe quality journalism makes Southern California a better place to live.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.